My name is Sherman Foster. I am 57 years old. Today's date is the 8th of August, 2019. I'm speaking with Brenda White, who is my mother-in-law. We're recording this interview in Southfield, Michigan. Can you tell me about someone who had a big influence on your life?
My parents had a big influence on my life. My dad is a veteran of World War II, and he was a family man who spent a lot of time with us. We had two girls, myself and my sister, and my mom, and we did things in the evening on the weekends as a family. He worked for Ford Motor Company, and he was real inspirational in the church. He was chairman of the congregation, and we were all involved in church, and we grew up in the church. And those morals and values had a front row seat in my life.
Okay. Would you tell me about some of the most important lessons that he taught you?
One of the most important lessons that he taught me was to use your own head. You have to use what you've been blessed with, your thinking skills, your reasoning skills, because you have to follow the rules and the laws that are required of you wherever you are, at home, at church, at school, in the community.
Okay. Well, can you describe one of your happiest memories?
Mm-hmm. One of my happiest memories were my dad was the coach of our softball team. We were in middle school. Mm-hmm. And we had a team that we were just struggling to be a good team. We were good to ourselves, but we weren't good enough to win. So when he worked with us and a couple of his friends came to help coach and got us organized and together and turned us around, and we were recreation champions in Detroit when I was about 13.
So basically, y'all started off like the Bad News Bears.
Yes, we did. We did, yeah.
What are you proudest of, and why does it make you feel proud?
Well, I'm proud that I am a college graduate,
mm-hmm.
and I was the first in my family. My immediate family to be a college grad, and that I went on to get my two master's degrees and an ed specialist. I became ill and was not quite able to finish. Well, I had done my PhD all the way to dissertation, but because of the treatment and because I wasn't able to keep up with what they said the timeline was, they had not let me finish my dissertation, but I did start it. I was halfway through. I had done the first two chapters and started the testing when they told me that I, you know, they would no longer wait, let me finish.
Right.
And that was at Oakland University. So I don't have a real special place in my heart for them.
Oh, I know that's right. So how would you like to be remembered?
I like to be remembered as being a person who is always eager to help where needed. I've helped in the community. I've helped in the church. I've helped in my family, my extended family. And I always try to help or lend a hand where I can.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, if this were to be our very last conversation, is there anything you want to say to me?
Well, what I would like to say to you is push forward, continue on till you reach the goals that you have set for yourself.
Okay, that sounds good to me, because that's exactly what I'm trying to do.
Yes.
Okay, for your great-great-grandchildren listening to this years from now, is there any wisdom you want to pass on to them? And what would you want them to know?
One, I want them to know the Lord, because
yes,
He's the creator and the head of our life, and He holds all power at all times in His hands. And keep those teachings alive and pass them on. Also, I want them to know to always strive to put their best foot forward. You cannot always have everything you want,
mm-hmm,
but He will provide everything that you need, and you have to make the right decision to do the right thing so that your life can be full.
Okay. I have some more questions. Tell me, how are you feeling today?
Oh, I'm feeling fine.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about yourself growing up.
When I was growing up, Detroit was a different place. I grew up on the west side of Detroit. It was safe. It was happy. We were able to go out. We could walk, ride our bike, visit, play outside with no problems. Nobody ever bothered us. We all stayed close to home, though. Those were the rules.
Mm-hmm.
You did not leave and go any place without your parents
knowing
where you were.
Nothing like it is nowadays.
Nothing. Nothing like it is. It's a whole different world.
Okay. Let me see. Tell me what you remember about the riots in Detroit.
Okay, the riot. I was a college student home for the summer when the riots. I think it was 67.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just in awe because I had never seen a military state before.
Right.
But we had to stay in, but we could look out the window and see the big trucks going down the street with the National Guard in there with their rifles all pointing up. And then when night fell, we had curfew and night fell, and you could hear gunfire. You could see fires all over the, you know, smoke and fires and blaze. If you looked out, just if you looked out the windows, if you were upstairs on the second floor.
Now, where was this? Where was this at?
This was all over the city of Detroit.
So they actually come through the neighborhood?
They came through the neighborhood because the street I was raised on was a secondary street.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the next largest street next to the main cross street. And they drove down our street several times a day. And you couldn't, at curfew, I think it was 6 o'clock after that, you had to pass, had to have a pass to go to work. Or to go to school, and that curfew went in effect about 6 that evening, and you didn't come off until that morning, the following morning. If you had to work night shift, you had to have a pass to even get through the street to get to work.
Wow, this is the first time I ever heard somebody say, I've heard about the riot, but nobody never told me about the pass.
Oh, yeah, you had to have a pass. And then, you know, you could hear that gunfire and stuff at night, and then they were reporting on the news where, you know, don't just light up, because there was a lot of sniper attacks.
Uh-huh.
And on that west side where I live, especially, that's where it started on the west side. The riot started in that area. And it just kind of spread, and they were looting. You could see people stealing, broken off with food and televisions and stereos and furniture. But they were staying everybody's hand. They weren't given the order to stop anybody at first. So they were just walking down the street and pulling a wagon, pulling a TV. I mean, it was just unbelievable. So I can imagine if I saw that, I would, you know, how are those children doing, fat people doing in war-torn countries that continue?
Right, yeah.
It's a devastating situation.
Right. Yeah, that would be something to see, because just to know that them tracks on them tanks running up and down, you can feel the rumbling and wow.
And you watch them with everybody with the National Guard with their helmets on, and just to see them all sitting up there in those trucks, a hole in their rifles, you know, like barrel pointing up. I don't know, I guess you could, that's a scary sight.
So if you had gotten caught after curfew, do you know what would have happened?
Probably they would have taken you to the police station and called your parents, because a lot of people did get caught.
Right.
And I knew that my father wasn't having it.
Oh, right, yeah, I got to come down there to get y'all out of there.
And so he said, don't let nobody ever call me to come get you.
Right. So now we talked about a little bit about your education. So how was your education experience in Detroit, public schools, based upon nowadays how they be campaigning to go to DPS?
Okay. Oh, it's just the education has made a 360. Because when we were coming up, that was one of the best school districts in the state.
Mm.
And I got a very good education. I attended Chatsey High School. We had one of the best commercial food departments in the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
where presidents have visited there. And but since those years since I've been there, Chatsey is now a middle school instead of a high school.
Right. Okay.
And we did very well. I had one of the best educations I think you could get for inner city school, but today it's nowhere near that. It's just when they did it used to be one superintendent's office, one school district, and when they start doing those different breaking it down where you would have a assistant superintendent in this area, region office, I think.
Okay. Uh-huh.
When they start dividing that up like that in different parts of the city, all that just fell apart. And some areas were getting more than other areas. And I think it all came down to finances and who was ciphering money and who was taking from the students' funds and who was ciphering federal funds. All I know is it was just corruption in it. And it filtered on down. So the main two people you need to have education to go forward is the teacher and the student. And those are just falling apart.
So you saying that's nowadays or based upon?
It was based upon from the time I was going to Detroit public schools and the way the public schools are. Now they're working hard trying to get back there, but I don't know. It's a hard, long road.
Okay. Now.
But they seem to be doing better than they have been.
So you said earlier that your degree was in education.
It is.
So I'm assuming that you were a teacher?
Yes.
What level?
Secondary ed, English, and social studies. I got my undergrad degree in. And then my first master's, I got reading and learning disabilities, special education.
Mm-hmm.
I got a dual master's from U of D.
Okay, oh wow.
And then my second master's, I got reading. Because of all of the problems I noticed with my own students,
mm-hmm.
I went back in reading and got my second master's in reading and instructional systems technology. And then I continued on into the doctoral program with the same area, reading and technology.
Oh, okay. So how long did you teach?
I taught 35 years.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
In the Detroit public system? Or?
No, I taught in Detroit for about 3 years. But because of Detroit's big transitions at the time, I was one of the teachers that pink slip and let go. You know, you didn't have much seniority.
Mm-hmm.
And so since I had only started teaching in 71, I would be the first ones to be let go. And then I went north to Pontiac. I hired in there. And I would still get pink slipped all the time because I was in English, and there were so many, you know, teachers with so much more seniority.
Right.
So I went into special ed, learning disabilities.
Okay.
I went from the bottom of the list to the top.
Right.
In special ed. And I stayed there at the top.
So
I didn't get pink slipped anymore after that.
So if you hadn't gotten pink slip for mm-hmm. English, would you have stayed? You think now that you know, got the experience, mm-hmm. you know, with the special ed?
Well, special ed and reading go hand in hand to me, because that was the main problem that they have is reading and math.
Right.
And so you got to know how to read to do everything. So I first got, when I was teaching ninth grade English, I noticed that kids who had kind of slipped through the cracks to ninth grade who could not read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I was pulling them, and the reading program started growing.
Mm-hmm.
But there weren't really any reading specialists at the time. So I think I ventured out into that area early enough where I was able to set up, you know, get the reading program set up. And before I retired from the Pontiac District, I was the reading specialist, director, I guess, for that building. And I got a state award for my program that I introduced called Drop Everything and Read.
Right, okay.
Where I had the entire building shut down every day for 15 minutes. No phones, no movement, everybody from the principal down to the hall monitor, cooks, all support staff had to read for 15 minutes every day.
Drop and read.
Drop everything
and
read.
So do they still have that, you know of now?
I don't know. There's been a lot of changes in Pontiac. There used to be two high schools. Now there's only one public high school. So I don't even know. I do still have some friends that teach there, but
yeah.
I have not heard from them to know if that program is still going or not, but I ran that program until I left.
So once you saw the need for a particular thing, that what made you change and get a degree in that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wow.
And that learning disability, because I had some kids I still didn't know quite how to reach. So I'm certified secondary ed with my bachelor's degree, but I kept getting all these kids who could not read, and then some who could not, well, a lot of them couldn't spell, but some of them couldn't spell their own name, their whole full name. They could spell the short a nickname that they had all the time, but they couldn't spell. And so I began to investigate it, and then there was a rise among kids with learning disabilities. So I went in that area. Before learning disabilities came about, it seemed that there were more emotionally impaired, more cognitively impaired students. But then the area got really full and wide, sort of like autism is today.
Yeah.
Learning disabilities was like that in the 70s.
So basically they was just looking at them.
Not really.
They looked normal.
Right.
So they just...
They looked normal, they act normal, unless you had them in a situation where they had to do a logical thinking and reasoning or anything abstract, they couldn't do it.
Now, were you the only teacher that was doing that, or once you came up with...
No, the field just kind of seemed to evolve. I don't know exactly how it got started. Maybe it was a side effect of some of the birth defects or some things that had changed, you know, in a lot of the young kids' lives. Because, you know, I feel that some things probably came about because maybe some things were genetic, but I think a lot of things have to do with the increase of drugs, of alcoholism, and then some things were just genetic.
Yeah, the learning part. Because I got a buddy right this day, and we are close, but, you know, I don't think he know that, you know, if anybody knew him, they remember he was in special ed.
Right.
But he's a mechanic, but I would love to know what type of cognitive tests did they have to take, back then, especially like now.
Right. Well, I know the Woodcock Johnson is one.
What was that?
The Woodcock Johnson is a test that we use. And we used the Brigance when I was teaching at the high school level. I taught the elementary level too, because I taught preschool, elementary, middle school, high school, alternative ed, special ed, adult ed, Upward Bound program, there's one more. And I taught, I was in the PhD program, I taught teachers in a summer program, teachers who were trying to learn how to use technology in the classroom.
So, have you ever gone back and done substitute?
No, I have not. I have not substituted. I have not gone back. I've had my own classrooms all the time.
So would that be something of interest, or you just said once you retired that was...
Well, I had a lot of medical issues for a while. Of course, those have ceased, or they're
subsided,
under control.
Yeah.
However, I've thought about it. And I said I wouldn't want to do it any more than part-time if I did it.
You know, because I'm sitting here thinking, once you just mentioned adult ed, maybe that would be some of interest. What do you think? If you had the choice of all of them that you have taught to go back to do it as a part-time substitute, Which one of them would it be and why?
Well, adult ed is good because when I was teaching adult ed, it was early, like in the evening. Mm. I don't want to have to go early in the morning. I don't want to be in this bad weather. I don't want to be late at night sliding home.
Right.
But adult ed was really good because you had a lot of mature adults who really wanted to learn. I cannot prefer not to deal with discipline problems.
Oh, yeah.
Because when you're teaching the general young population, you got to deal with discipline all the time.
Yeah.
You just, like a captain on your feet walking the whole time you're teaching. Because if you're over here, one on the left side of the room is cutting up. And so instead of doing what they're supposed to do, they're playing around.
Right.
Whereas when you have adult ed, you have adults who want to learn, who want to get through this so they can accomplish their goals. That's teaching.
Okay.
You know, they want to. The younger kids, half the time, you have to make them. There's always at least one in every class.
Right, yeah.
And make you work harder.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if you... Do you feel like going straight out of high school and basically going out of high school into college was some type of experience that you are glad you had, or would you have preferred to wait?
No, that was just what I needed. That was what I needed, to go right out of high school, straight into college. Because it helps you grow up. It helps you learn. And in my era when I was going, my parents were very protective and very strict. So you didn't get a chance to even try to be an adult unless you were going away to school.
Right, so for as like hanging out.
Oh no, I'm not a hangout person. The rule in our house growing up is you don't run the street.
Right.
You get in here and you're here, okay?
Right.
And if you don't have a destination, I have to know where you're going, know what that family is all about, what's going on, who's supervising, the leaving time and the return time.
Something that they don't have nowadays.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So now that you have grandkids, what would you like to see, you know, for their future and for their education?
I would like to see all of them get a college education because what you have in your head, nobody can take from you.
Exactly.
And in this day and time, you need not only the bachelor's degree, but you need a master's degree if you want to live comfortably.
Right.
Okay? Because if you don't have that, but even if they didn't go to college, if they went into a trade or an apprenticeship, it's still, you need education past the high school level. If you're going to be able to provide and live comfortable for yourself.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I didn't do all this for them to go backwards. I wanted them to go forward.
Right, because they have no excuse visual.
No, they have no excuse.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. It's out there. You know, people have died for you to have this opportunity.
Right, exactly.
Because, you know, at one time in this country, you were not permitted to know to read.
Right.
To know how to read or to think, to process information. But now that you have it, you cannot go backwards. You've got to propel forward.
So with you being retired X amount of years, have you gone back, like a continuing education type thing, to just keep up the pace with today's learning and what's the word I'm looking for? Technology.
Oh, well, technology is ever changing continuously.
Right.
So I try to stay up on technology because I have my own computer at home, laptop. I'm always doing something. And reading is fundamental, and it's just a part of my life, you know, to read. And I have not gone back because I was already at the highest level, but I broaden my perspective based on things that are going on. I have colleagues who some are teaching at the college level now, and I'm always in contact with them. And,
okay, yeah.
The ones that I used to teach with who have retired, we all get together, we all talk and converse, and it's like that. And then I have to keep my perspective open for church because I try to keep up on my word.
Right. So with you knowing how to do computers, how far off were computers prior to you retiring? Or had it just started or something?
Well, when I went back to get my master's in technology, that was my first introduction. You know, the very first introduction was, you know, the old big mainframe. And
right.
It couldn't do all that it does now. But I just had a little bit of introduction, but it didn't grab me at first. Until I started in the master's program, when I started and I said, well, I want to learn how to do all this, and I was first introduced to the computer, and so I bought the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything we did on the computer, I had to learn about all the different kind of software, and then how you incorporate it in your lesson plans to teach with it, how hands-on feeling for the students. Those who didn't want to read, and it wasn't, the book wasn't working for them, just had a computer to manipulate, pull their interest in.
Right.
So in order for them to learn how to do that, they had to put their eyes on the screen and read. That pulled a lot of kids in. And then as far as the games, that's when they learn to read too. Games, videos, those things engage them in the reading process.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a visual, but also tactile, touching, you know, feeling, finding those letters. And it makes them learn. And I noticed that my grandson, the youngest one, he will say, how do you spell this?
Yeah.
And then you tell him he's on the keyboard how to find that letter.
Right.
But he's got it now.
Yes.
He's got it.
Yes.
So that's really engaging.
Yeah.
Almost too engaging, because now they don't know how to quit and go outside and do anything.
Right. So, stay on that subject with him. With him learning, do you find yourself learning you teaching it? Yeah.
I find myself being excited because he's excited.
Yes, yes.
He has a thirst that, you know, we worry about them losing as they
get
older.
Right.
But he has that thirst to learn.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So do you, at any one point, given time, you sit down with him,
mm-hmm.
and say, we're going to sit down, we're going to read.
Mm-hmm.
Do you enjoy doing that, or you just enjoy seeing him, by him being your grand?
Mm-hmm. Both. I'd say both. Because I enjoy seeing him do it, so I can encourage him. Oh, that was so good. You did such a wonderful job. And then sometime, you know, just I'll read to him. Or sometimes then he reads to me.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
But I like that with all kids, because when I was in the reading lab, when I first started taking classes in the master's program, the kids were having reading problems, and their parents put them in their reading clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first thing I did was I read a high action story. It was almost like an oral dramatization. And the first thing he told his mom when she picked up, oh, she was reading, and it was like I could see the wolf coming around the corner.
Right, okay,
right. And so that grabbed his interest, and then we were able to build from there.
Yeah. You know, I gleam when I, you know, see a kid eager to learn.
Right.
And now that you, you know, I can glow just watching you talk about him, because I know, he does have a thirst.
Right.
And some of the words that he used, and I immediately say, was I talking like that when I was eight? I know wasn't.
I wasn't talking like that either. Kids are real smart nowadays.
Yeah.
And they have a wide, you see, when you have education passes, your kids and kids, they pick up on that oral language, and they use the language you use when they speak. And you can just hear the vocabulary is way above his chronological age.
Because their ears are wide open all times.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you say, they filter in it.
That's right.
They soaking it in, whether you teaching it to them or you just in a regular conversation. Yeah.
And they critique other people. They listen and they critique you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
So, this interview is getting ready to wind down, and I have one other question.
Okay.
Was the interview something that once it got going, you found yourself from sitting down to now? It's like taking a deep breath, being relaxed, because you was talking about you and something that you had passion for.
Oh, yeah. I love to talk about I have passion for, because I enjoy seeing kids accomplish, you know, what they like. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have as much joy for the kids that I taught in special ed when they have a breakthrough.
Right,
as I did
right.
for kids who I've taught in the college prep advanced English courses, who were able to explain their feeling about a certain piece of literature and who did an excellent job. And it made me feel good when those kids, sometimes you have to give them a little push and work them a little harder. And when they come out with that A, boy, they just, they are
right,
beaming.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't help but to glow for them,
because
you was instrumental in breaking it down and giving them the encouragement to do good.
Right. I still have a couple of number one teacher cups for kids that I had in special ed who were able to go on to college.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
What society that said
they couldn't do.
Right.
I encouraged them as much as I could. They used to question me at first, why we have to have all these spelling words? And why do we have to write everything in a complete sentence? I said, that's the basics.
Yes, right.
You gotta have that. You gotta string the letters together to make a word, and string the words together to make a sentence. You can string the sentences together to make a paragraph, and the paragraphs make an essay.
Right, okay.
You've got to know how to read, understand what you read, and write about it.
Right. Okay.
The right way.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. I never heard it put that way before.
Yeah. Well, they make it, because when you teach special ed, you get to break it down to the simplest form.
Yeah.
For them to understand.
Right. Okay.
And when they get it, they've got
it.
Right.
They
are so happy when they get it. Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for
for
this interview. And,
you're welcome.
And hopefully I will get an A on this year.
I sure hope you do, because it was wonderful. And I enjoyed the time answering the questions. And guess what? It made me think maybe I should, because I did look at a part-time position for a reading teacher at a charter school. I might look into
that. It was definite to me, especially I just keep going to that adult.
Oh, adult ed, too.
Yeah,
I like adult.
Because they see now you can't do nothing. One of the things that they have over us is you have 10 people in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Little Susie White will get promoted. And they say, oh, no, she got this over you. But when you get that education, they can't dangle nothing over your head. And that's part of the interview on the recording, too. What I just said about Lily White. But, and, you know, and I'll never forget when I first got out of the Army. Me too. Oh, yeah.